Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network of David Duenas. I am your co-host, Steve K9 Kim, and joining me as always from the beautiful city of San Francisco in the Bay Area, where Tony Bennett left his heart, Golden Gate Gabe Montoya. And Gabe, I would be stunned if we go any less than 2 hours. I can honestly say, just looking at the docket of big events, big fights to review and preview, this might be, prior to May 2nd with that little fight coming up, which they'll eventually print up tickets for, maybe the busiest, most eventful show of TNR that maybe we've had in a very, very long time. How you doing, Gabe?
I'm doing great. Good Monday to you. To take out a page, out of your book, Steve, we have a bevy of boxing to get to today. I'm very excited.
Wow.
Good stuff all around.
You went to the Kim vocabulary. Before we get started, I want to let you know this show is sponsored in part by the Iron Gym. Their address, 14548 Ventura Boulevard, Sherman Oaks, California. For more information on this fine establishment of fitness and boxing, 818-322-4627. Once again, that's the Iron Gym. Now, before we get started with round number one, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Once again, 347-215-7598. And we'll take your calls in about 15 to 20 minutes. If you want to tweet us a question, comment, or critique, you can do so at Steve UCN Live or at Gabriel underscore Montoya. Remember our new format. We'll go at least 90 and all the way up to 2 hours here on the next round with Gabriel Montoya and Steve Campbell. Let's get started with round number one. We have a split site doubleheader from my Verona, New York, and Arlington, Texas. The main event, perhaps, of the first half of the year, May 2nd withstanding, junior welterweights in action. Ruslan Provodnikov takes on Lucas Matisse. And then kicking off this HBO broadcast, another junior welterweight scrap, the debut of Terrence Crawford at 140, taking on Tomas Delorme. Gabe, Provodnikov, Matisse, short of something freakish happening, like lightning bolts hitting one of the guys entering the ring or a clash of heads, can this possibly be a bad fight?
I just don't see how it possibly could be. I mean, both guys, you know, maybe if Lucas takes the power of Ruslan Provodnikov early and decides to just turn it into a track meet boxing match, which I think of the two, he's the only one that has the ability to and potentially the inclination to in this kind of matchup. He is the boxer puncher. Ruslan Provodnikov is more the puncher brawler in its matchup. But I just don't think it's going to happen. I think both guys believe in the amount of punching power they bring to the table, and they know what the fans expect of them. So the characters are going to come through, and I think more importantly, their natures are going to come through. And we're going to get a war here for as long as it lasts.
Gabe, I think 2 points here I want to make. Number one is the durability factor. Who has more remaining in the tank? And, Gabe, I go back to that fight last April. Johnny Molina, a rugged brawler who's very, very crude but with heavy hands, sent Matisse to the canvas twice. That makes me wonder just a little bit. And secondly, for as much as we talk about this being a brawl and a real fight, I think it comes down to basics again. I think whoever employs the better stick, the number one, or what we call the jab, whoever uses it to set up their offense, to keep themselves a little bit shielded, and to work their way in and close distance without being such a flat surface, I think is going to be the key to the fight. And Ruslan Provodnikov at times gets very heavy on his feet and starts almost telegraphing the left hook and his overhand right. I think whoever utilizes this weapon properly, I think, has a significant advantage strategically.
I think a big punch in this fight, too, is the uppercut. Provodnikov, it's a guy that likes to bull forward, But he has a tendency to leave himself open for the five hole, as you call it, as he's coming in. He gets over the front foot and leaves himself kind of a flat surface waiting there. And I think if Matisse could just handle the heat, use the jab, and then set up a rear uppercut or, you know, do a 1-2 and come back with the uppercut on the left side, if that's successful, I think that's going to be a big key to victory for him. But really, it's going to come down to, I know this is kind of like from the Madden school of obvious, who can take whose punch? That's really what this whole thing is about. And if Matisse can't handle his punch the way he showed that he couldn't handle a big puncher in John Molina against Provodnikov, that could be deadly. And it could be an early night. But again, I tend to think that, and I'm a big Ruslan Provodnikov guy, but I just tend to think that Matisse is the superior boxer here. He's the guy that will be able to use his lateral movement, get up on his toes, double the jab, and fight at distance. He's dealt with speed when he's had to box. Devin Alexander is a great example. Zab Judah is another one. Against a guy like Provodnikov, who's just going to be coming to him, and it's really, you know, just going to be all-out aggression, I think he's just going to – Matisse needs to step off to the side, use angles, use that jab, and just box smart. Wait for the opportunity. The power shots will come.
Another issue that worries me about Provodnikov, and this has nothing to do with toughness, but it's genetics, his facial structure and his skin marks up significantly. And when you're facing a guy with loaded hands like Lucas Matisse, and I don't mean Antonio Margarito Camp Capatillo, I just mean a guy that's heavy-handed and can strike with such force and power, I think that's problematic. Another factor, Freddie Roach, because he's so busy with that event on May 2nd, he's made the decision. He simply needs to be with Manny Pacquiao, and Marvin Samudio will be working the corner. Those are those intangibles. In a close fight, we need to go to the whip. Coming down the home stretch, it may or may not make a difference. Gabe, it's time to put our money and go with the brass tacks. Provodnikov, Matisse, who are you picking?
Man, my gut says Provodnikov. My head just says Matisse. I think, like I've said, he's the better boxer. I tend to think that Samodio in the corner with Ruslan, he was there when Ruslan won his title. I tend to think that Andre is the guy that really is the translator and will bring the whip if he needs to. He's been there since the beginning with Ruslan. Freddie and Marvin have been additions to the team and good ones, but I don't think they're fully essential to on the night. But that said, I'm actually changing midstream. I'm going to go with my gut, Steve. Screw the chalk. I'm going with Ruslan Provodnikov. I just think he's going to crowd him. He's going to hurt him. He's going to get to that body. I haven't been the biggest believer in Matisse. When he's stepped up, he's either come up short or done a little enough to get robbed. So I'm going with Provodnikov here. I think he's learned his lesson with Algieri. He needs to be more busy, and I think he'll do it in this fight.
Gabe, I just got texted by John Kerry. He is very impressed by your flip-flop. He says he wants you to be his running mate the next time he runs for Austin. But Gabe, I'm going to go with Provodnikov, and I'll tell you why. I go back to the fight with Johnny Molina last year, and I worry about the wear and tear. And this is an intangible that maybe perhaps I'm overrating. Maybe it means something, maybe it means nothing. But Ruslan Provodnikov wanted this fight. Artie Palullo flat out told me just minutes ago in negotiating and navigating his 2015, last year they got stuck fighting Jose Luis Castillo in a bloodletting in Russia Thanksgiving weekend just to stay busy. Provodnikov made it very clear to all his handlers, short of getting Pacquiao or Mayweather, there's one guy that I want, and that is Lucas Matisse. And he fits my style, he's my type of guy, and it's the type of war that I need to get motivated. And I go back, the beauty of this fight is, Gabe, Provodnikov and Matisse are so avoided because of the meat grinder they put people through, and they willingly said, and they raised their hand and said, yeah, you, come across the bar, let's draw a line in the sand, let's do this in Verona. That's the beauty of this matchup. They rarely happen, or they don't happen enough in our sport. Mm-hmm. And with that said, I will go with Ruslan Provodnikov to come out victorious on Saturday night. Gabe, Terrence Crawford, Tomas Delorme. We talked about this on Twitter in the morning. I watched the 2 days with Terrence Crawford. And I have to tell you, people were wondering, is he going to stay at 135? Looking at the process where he had to wear 3 or 4 sheets of plastic suits and then wrap himself in hot towels and lay down on a heated hotel room and then take hot baths. Was there any doubt that it was time for him to move up to 140?
That's just brutal. You just watch it and you go, how do these guys compete the next day after making the weight, after this whole ridiculous ritual of starving down to a weight that neither of you guys are going to fight at? We saw it. It's a bit of Russian roulette. You're seeing it more and more with guys missing weight. We'll get to it later. Peter Quillen missing by 1.5 pounds. You got to know coming down from your room that you're off. That's got to be a terrible feeling. And the night of the fight, I think you see it with these guys. When they make that weight, we're not seeing everything that they've got. We're seeing a top athlete kind of at his worst, coming off what must feel like the worst flu you've ever had, losing all that weight. You get in there, maybe you've got your snap back, maybe you don't. Maybe you have your legs, maybe your tank's all the way full. More often than not, it isn't. It's like 3/4 full. I've been really excited to see Terrence Crawford at 140 because I think, you know, as the fights go deeper in rounds, we've been seeing more dimensions of him. But now that he's going up in a weight where things are more dangerous, but he's also getting back a part of himself physically, we're going to see even more from him. I can't wait to see it.
And, Gabe, you know what the ironic thing is? He's fighting a guy, Thomas Delorme, that I've heard should not be fighting at 140. And this is a big-boned, big-frame guy. And the history has been when he's failed or when he's faltered, even in winning, against a guy like Hank Lundy, you see the gas tank. That odometer hits E right around the 7th, 8th round. He's not the same physical being. Terrence Crawford, in my mind, is a premier practitioner of the sweet science. He's one of the best fighters in the world. Delorme, I think, is a solid 10-round guy. I think class shows, and I think Crawford skates his way to an easy decision victory, Gabe. Looks a lot like his fight against Bredas Prescott, but perhaps a little bit more entertaining.
That's an interesting comparison. I think that's right on the money. There's danger there with Delorme. I think he does hit hard. He's got a good boxing IQ, and I think he'll be well-conditioned. But I think with Crawford, this is his coming-out party, you know, and I think there's more explosiveness. I like his versatility, his ability and willingness to change in a fight, going from orthodox to southpaw, deciding to fight, and doing it effectively from either stance. I just think there's a lot of upside to this guy. He seems – I know everybody's kind of on the bandwagon right now, but with good reason. I think he's fighting fights of substance, and he's looking good doing it when he's winning. So I'm going with the chalk on this one. I'm going Crawford. I can't say late stoppage or not because I just don't know what he's like at the weight. His strength and his power might level off here, and there might be an edge off the speed, or all those things could gain a little bit as he gets refreshed by not having to kill himself the way he did in that video. So Crawford by comfortable decision, let's say.
If Crawford scores a knockout or knockdown, I believe it'll be in the second half of this fight as Delorme's physical being starts to fade right in front of our eyes. Moving on with round number two, it was the NBC on PBC, Chapter 2 from the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, and some close nip-and-tuck bouts. Andy Lee retains his WBO title even before the fight as Peter Quinn could not make weight, and he overcomes two early knockdowns to rally in the second half, and we have a split draw. We had two scores, 113-112 each direction, and 113-113. And then for the undisputed 143-pound championship of the galaxy of the PBC, Danny Garcia with a close, controversial 12-round decision over Lamont Peterson. Your scores, 115-113 twice, and then 14-14. Gabe, let's go to the first fight. There's a theory that Peter Quillen, because he was with the PBC and Al Haymon, that maybe they came overweight on purpose, knowing we don't care about any belt, much less the WBO, given the fact that many of us have talked about a PBC belt. But, Gabe, before we get to the fight, the fact that he did lose 0.8 of that and still came up short does suggest to me that even that effort alone, that yeah, I do think he tried to make 160, but again, I found it maddening that Ray Leonard is saying, boy, I just love the way he's so focused, and he just went out and did his job, and he praised him. Ray, of all people, being a fighter, should know when you've had this long to prepare and you don't make weight for a title that you once held and it's a title fight, that's not something to be praised, in my opinion, Mr. Montoya.
You know, Sugar Ray Leonard, I have to say, you know, through two fights, if you don't have something negative to say, you know, don't say anything at all. You know, I think he's just like Pollyanna. He's afraid to be critical of what he's seeing there. And that's doing a disservice to the fans. If the PBC is supposed to be bringing in, new fans, And I think that's evidence who they're trying to grab by rolling out the bones of Al Michaels and Marv Albert and Bob Costas. It's not for boxing fans. That's for a John Q. casual fan, the white guy, sports guy audience that watches football and all the others, trying to crawl those guys in, in the safety of familiarity. But what Sugar Ray Leonard's doing is ridiculous. He's not calling the fight. He's not calling the game. You know what I mean? I mean, a guy shows up underprepared on football Sunday. The book comes out on that guy. If he's not known as somebody that looks at the playbook, doesn't do as much film study as he's supposed to, the analysts there generally will call that out. And making weight, not being prepared for a fight, not using your jab often, having poor fundamentals, all those things should be called out. I just disagree with the idea that we've got to praise the PBC and stay completely positive when we're discussing it, because we're all trying to help build it and bring boxing back to free TV. No, call it like it is. It was unprofessional. It was disrespectful to the title. I do agree with you, Steve, though. I had people there on the floor talking to me that were around. Peter Quinlan did try to make weight. It was an honest effort. He was gutted that he didn't make it, as well he should be. But wait, man, you've been off a year. Stay in shape.
Andy Lee hits the deck in the first round, in the third round, and Gabe, I'm in the minority. I think the third round knockdown was legit. I believe that there was a punch that precipitated
yes.
the gravity. Whether he got his foot stepped on or got shoved down, I believe that first punch of the two-punch salvo had him in the process of hitting the floor. So with that said, Quillen has a pretty significant lead in the first third half of the fight. But I think the steadiness of Andy Lee, who then started to land the occasional right hook, started to get to Kid Chocolate. But here's what I thought going in, and it was reaffirmed during this night, Gabe. Both fighters have pretty good offensive tools. They're very sizable middleweights. But I think durability on both ends is a huge question mark. And I'll say it right now, blunt as I can. I don't think either guy goes halfway through the distance with one Gennady Golovkin.
Yeah, styles make fights, and I think, I don't know, it was an interesting fight, because both guys were chasing each other's power, and so they became a bit tentative. I mean, it was a bit like the Korobov fight with Lee, a lot of these fights, where people just know they've got a very dangerous puncher in front of them. For Quillen, though, I wondered, is his lack of activity, lack of a jab or a sustained offense, how's he feeling after making that weight? What did it take from him? He probably put a lot into just missing the weight and then put even more after that. I would say to your point, I read that on Twitter today. I would probably tend to agree with that, that the Triple G would probably put both of those guys out. But I also kind of want to see Triple G in with both those guys so that we find that out. With Peter Quillen, we probably won't see that. With Andy Lee, I thought it was a great thing that Quillen – the fight came out the way it was. The draw, I thought, was fair. I thought the judges did a very good job in a very close, nip-and-tuck, tough fight that was a tale of two halves. And it was nice that Andy doesn't have to leave with an asterisk on his title. They don't say, oh, well, but he lost to Kid Chocolate. He got kind of blown out. I was worried about him in the first few rounds there, that he was just going to get absolutely shredded by a guy that didn't make weight, which wouldn't do anybody any good. So we got a good, tough, clean fight. And both guys come away. I don't know what Quillen's stock is like after this, but Andy Lee, I think, came away as unscathed as you possibly could be going into enemy territory like that.
I know there's talk of a rematch. I don't know if the fight was really good enough where you want an immediate one, but here's the reality. Peter Quillen's made it very clear that, like most Heyman A-sides, and he is one, maybe on the lower ebb of it, he will not travel. He will not punch his passport. And the other factor is the WBO mandatory is B.J. Saunders, who took a step-aside fee. I believe B.J. Saunders probably next in line, in which will be a very big fight somewhere in Ireland or the U.K. between Andy Lee and B.J. Saunders. Now, Gabe Garcia-Peterson, I'm going to clear the lane for you. Who did you have winning? How did you see those 12 rounds going?
Why are you going to throw that on me? I read 7-5, Garcia. I started to rewatch it today. I found it very boring. And I had other fights to get to, so I got to put it on the shelf. I do want to rewatch it, but more and more I think rewatching something with the intent to rescore it is just kind of silly. My first impression was that Garcia won. He got beat up in the back end of the fight. His face got marked up, but you can't score the blood. You can't score that stuff because it could happen from one punch It could have happened from the gloves. It could have happened for another of reasons. What I saw was Peterson admiring his own work, as defensive guys do, running way too much in the first half of the fight. Yeah, Garcia wasn't doing a hell of a lot, but he was making the fight. And it's not like Rigo and Mayweather, examples you brought up on Twitter, where they come out and actually assert their presence. They take center stage. They hit you with the jab up and down. If you hit them, they make sure that they come back and score to reassert themselves. Lamont looked like a guy, his presence in the ring was one of a guy that didn't really want to fight for several rounds and was content to make Danny Garcia miss and not really do much in return. And I think it made him pay. You know, he started too late. He could have won that fight, but he didn't.
Gabe, I'll say this, and to reiterate my point I made on Twitter on Monday morning. If it was Lamont Mayweather or Guillermo Peterson, and he fought exactly the same way, there'd be a chorus of, that's boxing, it's hit and not be hit, that was beautiful ring generalship and defense. And when he did step inside, which I thought he should have fought him much sooner during the course of those 12 rounds, instead of waiting 7 or 8 rounds, do that in the fourth or fifth, but I still think he won the fight. I thought he landed a cleaner, harder shot, and I know it's a round-by-round concept, and people can say, and this goes back to Trinidad De La Hoya, when people say, well, De La Hoya was winning after 8 rounds. You're right, but it wasn't 8-0. And was Peterson giving away rounds in the first half? Yes, but that doesn't necessarily mean it was 6-0, 5-1. And one thing was found out about Danny Garcia, and this goes back to the Mauricio Herrera fight. If you're technically sound and you can move a little bit, one thing, I think Danny Garcia, for a good fighter, is as flat-footed and dug in on his heels as any fighter in the world. He absolutely needs to be planted in cement to be able to punch effectively. He doesn't do what the old-time Don Familton, great trainer from out here, used to say, called punching on the fly. He's not very good at that. And there's another issue. I think he's got a problem. As one of our tweeters, Mr. Blue, has pointed out, is he a bit too big for 140 and not big enough for 47? Yes, I believe he's a tweener, and that will be problematic. And I've always said about Lamont Peterson, he doesn't do anything great, but he's very well-rounded. And, Gabe, when he got his hands going on the inside, there's a part of me that said, even though I thought he won, there should have been more of that earlier. And it wasn't, and it cost him.
I just don't understand why Lamont Peterson fought that way. You know, it was very good boxing. And I take it in totality, I liked his performance more. You know, it had a beginning, middle, and end. But like you said, he started to. And against
Gabe,
Garcia,
you know what I think it is? I think that they were absolutely wary of being timed with the left hook. What is Garcia's best punch? It's the counter left hook. He's not very good at leading with it, but he can time you with it coming in. And there's no doubt that the way they were circling the ring, the lateral movement, and the amount of it, they absolutely were not going to put themselves in the crosshairs of that particular punch.
Yeah, I agree. I think he lost, you know, probably the first 3 rounds based on that, of just staying away too much. You're right. I think after 6, it was a little closer. You know, and again, maybe I need to rewatch it. Steve or Dave and I were doing a live round by round. Dave had Lamont winning. He tends to agree with you. I just felt like there was times where it just his shots weren't landing as much as he thought he did. You know, Peterson's shots weren't landing as much as he thought they were, particularly after defense. When he did get in close, like the 6th round, he starts getting in the pocket. It was good, but it wasn't total dominance. And I don't understand why he didn't. It wasn't a unification match. It was a 143-pound fight. He's been treated this way by Al Haymon since they've started doing fights together. Since the Amir Khan fight, when he started doing business with Golden Boy, and how they vilified him after taking the title from Khan in a close fight, it should have been a clue to him. And he signs with Al. Now, Danny turned pro with Al. Lamont's just a recent signee. Who do you think's family and who do you think isn't? He fought in a manner that just allowed them to take it from him. It was very frustrating to watch. As good as his defense was and moving and all that, he had to know that he was already down on the cards walking in.
Gabe, I've stated this for months. The fact they made this fight at 143 was a definite advantage, a tipping of the scales in favor of the young man from Philadelphia. And it was what it was, as I like to say. If you want to call in, that number 347-215-7598. One news and note here before we move on. According to Gary Shaw, The contract is not done, but other outlets are reporting that on June 6th, Miguel Cotto will make his return against Daniel Gill at the Barclays Center in New York. Gabe, Gill Cotto, I don't know if HBO is involved in this because I've been told again that HBO says without a Canelo commitment for the second half of the year, they will not be doing Cotto's next fight. But putting all that aside, Daniel Gill for Miguel Cotto as the dance partner, thumbs up or thumbs down in this circumstance?
Thumbs up. I think it's a solid opponent. It's a former world title holder. Anything's better than Cornelius Bundridge. You know, it is what
or
it is.
Highland. Or Highland.
Or Highland. Yeah, I mean, it's a legit guy. I don't. It's not the sexiest opponent in the world. In that, and you look back at Garcia versus Peterson. You know, one guy can punch, and one guy is a strong puncher, but he's not a knockout guy. You know, Peterson, and that's kind of how I look at this fight. Although I think both guys aren't. You know, what Cotto did to Martinez, I think, is an anomaly at 160. This could be a fun fight. It could be a fun second half, no doubt.
Here's a tweet from the president. Scale of 1 to 10, rate the disgrace level of Cotto. Gabe, I'm with you. You take away one booming right hand from Gennady Golovkin, Gill, by today's standards, has been a very good middleweight. And that's it. So you take away the Golovkin fight, it's a pretty representative guy. Here's the reality about Cotto. He's really a blown-up 54-pounder, older in age, and Gill is the natural 160 that has pretty good legs. I don't see this being an easy fight at all. In fact, I'm putting on right now the upset alert, and
yeah.
I'll say this right now. Miguel Cotto could get caught looking ahead. It's happened before, and could I see an Austin Trout situation breaking out of nowhere? Yes, absolutely. And also I've been told by other people involved that there will be a catch weight of 157. But where I think the president has a point here, Gabe, we all know he's avoiding Golovkin, hiding behind the WBC belt and the lineal title. But isn't it, no matter what we think of Gill, and we've defended him, isn't it a bad look that he's basically feasting now on Golovkin leftovers? It's a bad look.
He's Miguel Cotto. You know, he's a legit pay-per-view fighter. He's a legit franchise fighter. Golovkin's coming up, but he hasn't done what Cotto's done in this sport. I think he's earned his spot. He's an older fighter, and I mean, people that get upset about a fighter cherry-picking, it's like, have you not been watching boxing your whole life? That's what the whole sport's based on. That's how careers are built. I mean, go back to John L. Sullivan or Jack Johnson. They cherry-picked.
But isn't there a difference between understanding the dynamic and opposing it? I mean, I understand it, but I don't like it. I think the fans have a right to say, wait a minute, we're the consumer here. We're not doing this. We don't like it. They do have the right to at least express that opinion.
Absolutely. I'm with you on that, but then do something about it. Don't buy any tickets. Don't watch the fight live. Don't DVR it. Find some other way so that it really shows in the numbers. It shows in the ratings. It shows in the pocketbook. Actually take the power. Just, you know, Twitter and Facebook and all these things are great. They give everybody a voice. But if the voice has no action, who gives a shit?
Here's another one from the president. Is the PBC doing well so far? Losing ground or too early still to tell? The in-arena experience was better than TV, in my opinion. He was there. Andrew V. Kennedy on Saturday night. I think it's too early to tell, but here's what I find interesting, the narratives. People are trumping up the fact that they won the demographic between 18 and 49 Saturday night with the males, which is a key demographic. But here's the other way, and again, I wish people would at least express both sides of the story instead of protecting their credentials. Number one, Saturday night is not a big night for TV, bottom line. And number two, it was still nearly a quarter decline from the first broadcast on NBC, and Gabe, that's with a lot less sports competition this past weekend.
That's significant. I agree with you. It's too early to tell. But I'm curious, and I'm not, you know, a big ratings guy, you know, in terms of understanding all the machinations here. But you know, who they're marketing to is your casual fan, the guy that's at home watching all those other sports in general, the person that watches NBC. I'm not that guy. I'm curious to see how how comparable, like, you know, if you look at HBO and Showtime's ratings or ESPN's ratings for boxing, and then take that number and kind of, you know, superimpose it over these ratings and look at how big the audience could be. I wonder how comparable those numbers would be, because the PBC is not trying to capture the boxing audience. It's already got us. We're going to watch it, you know, if it's on BN Sports or True TV or whatever the hell, we're going to track down our boxing and we're going to watch it. It's the other guys. I think in a year we'll know. When we can compare these numbers to a year from now's numbers and the regularity they put on shows and built that audience or not, it's going to take time to figure this all out.
It'll be interesting to see what they now come up with and unveil for the second, third, and fourth generation of fights, because you knew coming off out of the gate they'd have good matchups, and they've had. And I thought the April 11th show was far better than March 7th. But now, what matchups are they going to give us? I mean, Gabe, I saw part of the broadcast where they put up the graphics of the three upcoming shows on CBS, and I think it was Spike TV, and I was just like, eh, no thanks. It wasn't all that great. And you're actually hearing rumors of Adrian Broner against Rancid, and I mean Rancid Barthelemy. And I'm just like, no bueno. Yeesh, exactly. And Victor Salazar, the boxing voice, is reporting that one of the rumors that he heard, and he was in attendance this Saturday night, is a fight between Keith Thurman and Sean Porter. Gabe, a fight like that, and I don't know how well it's going to do if it would sell a million tickets, but right there, that type of matchup, that better be the standard to bear from this point forward if they want to make this whole project, if you want to call it that, sustainable.
That's it. It's got to be about the fights. You know, I think that's the bottom line for every promotional company. It's about the fights. You know, Matisse versus Provodnikov, that sells itself. You know, it's doing well at the box office, and it's an obscure, you know, casino in upstate New York, and it's still going to do well, I think. It's unfortunate that it's there, but, you know, you could thank the PBC for that one, apparently. What is next for him? I think Thurman Porter is a hell of a fight. But beyond that, you know, Broner, Rancis Bartholomew, that is terrible. I'm going to send this back. There is a fly in my fight. I do not want to see that.
That one better not be on CBS, NBC, ABC, ESPN, Bounce. That better be on C-SPAN. No, in fact, C-SPAN 2. Anyway, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Again, we have at least an hour, maybe up to 2 hours. It's up to you. Call in. If you want to tweet a question or a comment, you could do so. At Steve UCN Live, at Gabriel underscore Montoya. Give us some of your thoughts on the PBC. Who did you have winning these fights? And who are you tabbing, the Machine or the Siberian Rocky, Saturday night on HBO? Gabe?
All right. In the 787, you're live on the next round.
Hi, guys. This is Javier.
Oh, Javier. Hey. Viva Rocky Martinez. What a weekend I had in San Juan, Puerto Rico.
You know, Steve, because of the surgery, I couldn't go to the fight, and it felt good for a while to pay for a pay-per-view that you know is what's going to deliver, at least on the main event. And I saw the whole broadcast, and okay, I paid the $40, but we knew that was going to be a war, and it was. And I thought the judges, I thought they were a little wide, but I thought Rocky won the fight with the two knockdowns. I didn't like the point deduction, but I thought that Rocky deserved the decision based on the two knockdowns, and it really was a war.
Javier, personally, I had 113-112 Cerry Salido, but I could see it either way. And you're right. When you lose 3 points, whether it's by hook or by crook, it is tough to win the fight on the road. Javier, the question that I have for you is, and this kind of out there, is what cable or satellite system do you have? Because my understanding is that DirecTV basically pulled out from their commitment to distribute this fight, and a lot of people that wanted to see it couldn't.
I got Liberty Television, what I was told was that because DirecTV has been doing other promotions here in Puerto Rico, the relationship with the Riveras, who have been very strong for a lot of years, has taken a hit. So that's an interesting point, because they've been doing Bustillo cards and other promotions cards, exclusively on DirecTV, and I think that has somebody told me that that might have something to do with the decision at the last hour of not doing the pay-per-view.
Yeah, that's really too bad, because it really was, as promised and as advertised, a war. Now, Gabe, I don't know if you were able to see this fight yet, but my concerns about Orlando Salido's punch resistance continue and grow, because Rocky Martinez is not what I'd call Bazooka Gomez here. This is not Trinidad. This is a guy that's kind of a mauler, a brawler, but kind of gets you by volume. And more we're seeing Orlando Salido in the first half of fights on his backside.
Yeah, I did see the fight. The miles are catching up, and maybe the making the weight, I don't know. But at the same time, he gets dropped, and the guy gets up, and he gets a second wind like crazy, and it's just, you know, a windmill to the body, a grind out, just all out assault. You got to give it up to him. The guy just doesn't want to take no for an answer. I had Martinez winning, but Sirius Toledo, I mean, you know, at some point, I think everybody around him needs to take a long look. Because he's been fighting more than half his life. And it's just, when you start to see a guy get knocked down like that, even if he does come back up and roar back, it's just that time. It's hard to say with a guy like, you know, warrior like that. It's all he knows. But, you know, I hope he saved his money, because he's going to need it.
From what I understand, he's invested it well. He has several properties. But, Gabe, he's 34 going on 57, and it's 19 long, hard years. And the word is that if they don't have to do the mandatory against Francisco Vargas, and that is still up in the air, that'll be decided by Paco Varcarcel, there's a very good chance we might do this fight again, more along the lines of the West Coast, and pairing it with the fight that would be able to then have that fight featured on HBO sometime during the summer. Javier, anything else we can do for you?
One last thing regarding the fight, and I also want to make a quick comment on Cotto. One last thing regarding the fight. I thought Salido was changing the fight. The seven rounds was brutal for Rocky Martinez. And I was kind of surprised that in the eighth, he was able to change a little bit of the fight and did not let Salido take control entirely of the fight, even though I thought Salido won most of the second half of the fight. I think some of those rounds, Rocky was able to hit him back enough so you can make for a close round. And especially that eighth round, I think it was very important, because it seemed like the momentum was changing, and he changed it back to Rocky, who was winning because of the two knockdowns earlier.
Javier, I thought in the 10th or 11th, maybe both rounds, that Rocky was going to wilt under the weight of that just blistering two-fisted body attack by Salido. But I've always said it about a guy like Rocky Martinez, he's more tough and stubborn than a Korean mother-in-law. I mean, my hat's off. I don't think a lot of people could have withstood that type of assault. Javier, your thoughts on Cotto Gil as a proud Puerto Rican, yay or nay?
I believe it's a lot better than either Bondrich or Hayland. I believe Gail beat Truman and gave Martinez all he can handle. And if you get knocked out by Golovkin, everybody gets knocked out by Golovkin. But I'm kind of interested in what HBO will do, because I am not sure that they have talked that they will not do the Cotto fight. I am told that the fight will be on HBO. But
okay.
But it's interesting that I am not sure if they are thinking, you know, Gail is a more life underdog than probably Bondrich or Hayland was. So maybe they don't put the restriction to Cotto of you have to make either the Canelo or Golovkin fight. But I still am not sure that HBO will do the Gail fight and that Miguel can walk. So that's an interesting dynamic. But I believe that it's not a 10 fight, but I believe it's a 7 or an 8, and I believe Miguel Cotto has earned the right. If he's going to do a big fight later on the year like Canelo or Golovkin, I believe he has earned the right to take a fight like you.
Gabe, my statement's very simple. If he fights Canelo or Golovkin next, Danny Gill in the interim, I think it's perfectly acceptable, as long as there is a commitment to it.
Absolutely. I think that's, you know, and Miguel, that's the thing. If people trash Miguel Cotto as if he's had a career, made a career out of avoiding tough fights or something. He's a true warrior. He's given it his all in the ring. And I think he's afforded a little bit of, you know, a retirement kind of fight, a little bit of padding for when he lands in a couple fights from a Golovkin right hand or a left hook. I think that's fine if that happens, you know. But I still don't think Golovkin, I mean, he won the middleweight title. He's got to fight the guy so that everybody can feel as if the torch was passed. I get that. But do you consider Golovkin out of the next generation as somebody that he has to face in order to secure his own legacy?
Not really. Listen, I may be in the minority with the Cotto backlash, and I have not been the biggest fan of his recent moves or behavior. Whether he wins, yeah, loses, or never faces Golovkin again, I think he's getting his fist encased in canastota. He's a Hall of Famer. But if you're going to carry around the middleweight title, there's an obligation to face middleweights and the best ones. That's why I was not a big fan of the whole Sergio Martinez is old, he deserves easy fights. Well, let him cash annuities in Argentina then. Not here on my dime, on HBO. And I have the same standard for everybody, including
That's
Miguel Cotto.
I do not believe he needs the fight. He needs to fight Golovkin for his legacy. I believe if he doesn't fight Canelo, that will really hurt his image, because he has fought everybody that there is. He Mayweather, Pacquiao, but people want the Canelo fight for a long time here in Puerto Rico. Remember, he beat his brother. He beat his brother like 7 years ago.
People are talking about
that fight since then, because he beat his brother, and everybody's saying, okay, now fight the real Cotto.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, Javier, we got to get moving along. Thank you very much. Gabe, you wanted to make a point.
I think he's right, and in terms of a marketing standpoint and for HBO's standpoint, you know, okay, Canelo lost to Mayweather. No shame in that. He's the best fighter in the sport, arguably. We'll find out May 2nd. But the Mexico-Puerto Rican rivalry is bigger than all that. And I don't think there's, you know, if you're going to pass a torch in terms of pay-per-view or who's leading the sport in the Latin market on HBO, I think that's a really important fight for all involved. I think for redemption for Canelo, for legacy for Cotto, it's just all action. I'm more excited about that fight than I would be about seeing Golovkin destroy Cotto, because I just think it's a mismatch physically.
Yeah, from a competitive standpoint, there's no doubt which fight it is. It is Cotto Canelo, and it also another chapter in the Mexican versus Puerto Rican rivalry, the Yankees and Red Sox of boxing. Gabe?
We got a whole lot of callers on the line, so we'll blow through them. 323, you're live on the next round.
Gentlemen, fight on from USC.
Hey, fight on. Sons.
Fight on.
How's it going? Welcome back, Steve.
Wapa.
Don't say that, Steve. You're back in Mexico now, okay?
Stop it. Steve Mexican forever, but I love my Boricua brothers and sisters. That's all I got to say. Viva Puerto Rico!
I'm glad you had a wonderful time over there, Steve. You got to see real boxing, and I was relegated to watching Mr. 1.4 and the 143-pound champion on network TV. So I'm glad you enjoyed your trip, Steve.
By the way, the greatest part of that trip was outside the fight was seeing Felix Verdejo up close and personal at the gym built by Ricky Marquez. I think Ricky Marquez is building a nice little stable of young fighters. I'm not going to call him the Boricua Kronk, but I'll say this. The Islanders, and I've talked to them, and everyone talks boxing there, from when you check into the hotel, the guy that waits on your food. They love boxing. It's ingrained in their culture. A fight like Martinez-Salido is a big deal. And they don't hate Cotto. They still respect him. But I get the sense, guys, they are ready to turn the page to the Verdejo chapter of things over there.
Oh, yeah, I'm ready for Verdejo. I take up that Mexican-Puerto Rican rivalry. But Verdejo has that it factor. He's a star in the making. It's time to turn the page. I mean, I don't need Cotto to fight Triple G. I would like it, but I want to see him and Canelo give that for the fans, for the rivalry, and then get the Verdejo train running. Let's get it going. I can't wait to see when him and Crawford matchup at 140 down the line.
Hmm, absolutely. So, Sanj, what did you think of the PBC fights on Saturday?
They were anticlimactic. I mean, the Lee Quillen fight picked up after the sixth round. There was just a lot of, like, spilling out. There was, like, 30 seconds of fighting each round. And the main event, I don't know what the hell Peterson was doing for the first three, four rounds. But once he started planting his feet and actually administering pressure to Garcia, he was imposing his will. And I think if he would have started earlier, he had a good shot of putting Garcia away. But he was doing too much. He was doing a little bit of Ali shuffling too much, and he started feeling himself too much. And going forward, we just need some better matchups, because during the broadcast, I don't know if you saw, Steve, there was nothing but NBC commercials. Fast and the Fury. I mean, like, I'm just being honest. I mean, being objective, I just saw nothing but NBC commercials. They can say they won the demographic, but, I mean, if all I
winning
see is NBC
the,
stuff.
Winning the male demographic on a Saturday night, and I've talked to a few people that know a lot more about this stuff than I do, that's like being the fastest Korean sprinter. Not really saying all that much. You're not doing Usain Bolt of Asia, okay?
Is that a captive audience? Like, guys, it's just have
yeah.
nothing else going on anyways? Is that what you're trying to say?
Basically, it's like being the world's greatest Korean heavyweight. Very, very shallow pool.
And I have an internship at NBC Universal, and I don't see no – because it's a time buy, I don't see no advertisements for PBC at the Universal lot or in the NBC office. So I just think it's just a situation where they're taking the money and, you know, they're just
right.
plugging their spots.
You're in the entertainment business. I know that that's kind of what you studied there at the fine University of Southern California. Me and Gabe have talked about this in private. Don't the broadcasts look a little bit stale and antiseptic?
They look very stale. There's no pizzazz. It's very flat. I mean, if you're trying to it's just flat. HBO is still miles ahead of them and getting you ready for a fight. I mean, this Saturday we got Provodnikov and Lucas, so I'm going with Provodnikov, by the way. And then we got Mr. Chavez Jr. over there, and I'm taking a under 4,000 on the attendance at StubHub this weekend, Steve. Under 4,000.
No. With the caveat, real tickets, not the one iota, not the papering of the arena, because I know for a fact people have given me evidence. Gabe, they are doing some steep group discounts, and I'm talking up to 40%, where they are waiving the fees and the taxes and giving you free parking and giving you an extra ticket. And they've actually told people, friends of ours, Gabe, that we both know, when they say, well, what about the lower price tickets? They'll say, well, they're not available. Those are sold out, which, trust me, they aren't. And then the next day, it's, sir, they've suddenly opened up 2,000 of them. I find it amazing that Chavez Jr., that 3 years ago was a legitimate ticket seller, and I believe by real ticket numbers, he will be outdrawn by Gennady Golovkin in Los Angeles. Just think about that.
I tweeted you guys the other day, you and Steve and Kim, the little giveaway, the ringside contest they're giving away for that fight, you know? So it's like,
yeah.
They're not so, you know, it's laughable. But going forward, I want to see the PBC do good. I want to see the PBC do good because I want to see boxing, you know, get back to the forefront of, you know, sports entertainment. But going forward, they just got to revamp the whole field. They need to get a television person in there that knows how to package something together, that knows how to put a visual feel towards the audience and tell the story leading up to the fight and let the fights give the fans and the consumer on television what they want.
You know, they need to be more inclusive. If you just want to do Heyman versus Heyman crime, sorry, I think that's a very, very low ceiling. Sanj, we got to get running, okay?
One more thing.
Yes.
I want you to support the June 20th PBC, Steve, because they're going head-to-head with Mr. You-Know-Who in Oakland. So we have to promote the hell out of that PBC card, regardless of who Adrian Broner's fighting, Kim, okay?
BET, the home of Donnie Simpson, Video Vibrations, and Andre Ward. Sanj, thank you for the call. Gabe, before we take our next call, I was just told by Artie Palullo before we started our show, not only is the Turning Stone, their venue, sold out with right around 5,000 tickets, they are actually adding a few hundred extra tickets with bleachers. So, again, It's like the Field of Dreams. If you build it, they will come, Gabe.
Not only are they adding those seats, they're not giving them away for free.
No one iota here.
A lot of actors need work, Steve, and they're getting it from the BBC. 703, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up, guys? Good evening. It's just Wiz from Baltimore. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
All right. Hey, listen. Yeah, exactly. I like the fights on Saturday night, actually. I agree with the draw. I don't think either of those fighters did enough, to get an edge on the scorecard. So I favor Andy Lee actually going into that fight, and I really like what I saw. I feel like both of them, actually, if they can combine a little more, they can probably get the better of them in the rematch. And
frankly, I will be more interested in watching any of those guys against Golovkin, because so far Golovkin has been able to walk through guys. I kind of want to see Golovkin trying to walk through the shots of either of those guys. See that chin, how it can handle. And then, Lamont Peterson, in my mind, I really like what I saw, and him winning the fight. I mean, it was a little boring, and he did a little running, but I thought he won the fight. I mean, Garcia didn't look too good, in my opinion. And I really like Ruslan this weekend. Probably by 8 or 9 round knockout. I think he has the better whiskers. That's what I got, man.
All right, Lewis, you are on the record as always. Thank you for the call. Gabe, couple of tweets here. Kevin McCray says Gill is still top 10, but only image I see is Triple G pasting him. Looks like Cotto's taking scraps, which is a bad look for the champ. Here's one from LRS. Now Peterson is stripped by the IBF. What do you think of Sankwell versus IK Yang for the IBF title? Yang's a talented guy. I think he has much more upside than the other guy that's out of China. I forget his name. What's his name?
Yao.
Yeah, Zhao Shuming. I don't know what to say, but I'm glad that the IBF and at least one sanctioning body is playing by their rules as it relates to the PBC. And here's one from G2. Sugar Ray Leonard loses me. Great fighter. Can't get behind him as a commentator for the PBC. That seems to be the majority opinion. Gabe, let's get back to the calls.
Yeah. I'm curious. It's just a question. As we talk about Triple G and who we'll have next, after should he get through Willie Monroe, he hasn't faced a whole hell of a lot of punchers. Curtis Stevens, probably the biggest puncher he's faced. Lee and Quillen are both guys that put each other down, and they're known for stopping people. Lee, I think his last three fights, we can say what we want about him not winning in the fights, but ultimately he knocked dudes out, and he fought his way back into these fights with power. That alone makes both those guys an intriguing matchup for him. Again, Quillen lives in an alternate universe known as the PBC, but Lee, I'll take that match. Even if people are picking Golovkin by mid-round stoppage, Lee showed us a whole new dimension by getting up and fighting through it in his last fight.
But remember this. Andy Lee was signed to fight Golovkin last year, then unfortunately real life got in the way, and hopefully they are destined to meet in the future. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. At a quarter past the hour, we'll go through some news and notes. Gabe?
860. I have a feeling this is CT. You're live on the next round.
Yeah, how you guys doing tonight?
Good. What's going on, CT?
Definitely talk about those fights coming up this weekend. I think they're both very interesting fights. I think with DeRome and Crawford, I can see Crawford getting hurt early because DeRome starts off pretty quick, and he has a pretty good punch early. So I see Crawford getting stunned early, but then cruising to a decision late. Maybe a late-round stoppage, but the only reason why I'm going to say probably not, because DeRome usually has trouble with pressure fighters, which, how Mayfield and Lundy did late to kind of discourage him. I don't think Crawford's actually like a pressure or a rough fighter late in the fight. So I see him boxing the decision. And then on the Matisse and Prudnikov, I can't see no way that fight going past six or seven rounds. I want to say I'm going with Matisse because he's the better combination puncher, even though I think Prudnikov has probably the better chin. I think Matisse has a second gear in fights, and he goes better to the body.
Gabe, I think for the safety of both fighters, I think it would be better if it didn't go past six rounds between Matisse and Prudnikov. Less is more here, maybe.
I think so. I mean, we could see, I think Lucas is going to be the guy looking for long range. You know, he's going to want to catch Prudnikov coming in, stay behind a hard jab, and keep on the move. Prudnikov's going to get him to the ropes and maul him. It's going to be about adjustments and who's able to establish that game plan. I just have a feeling about Prudnikov that, after Tim Bradley, he comes back with a big win. After this Algieri fight, the retooling with the ghost of Jose Luis Castillo, did some quality rounds with him. I think here he's going to have a big night. I think he's going to get to the body and do it early and shake up Matisse.
CT, anything else we can do for you?
I just want to talk about Garcia, if I could. I think Garcia lost to Lamont Peterson. I thought Lamont edged him a little bit. But I think definitely Garcia is going to have problems at welterweight, and that's the reason why I think he kind of worried about going up to welterweight recently. But I can see him definitely getting beat at welterweight.
Huh.
Got to work on a few more things.
You know, at 140, he was a big, strong, strapping kid. At 147, just another 47. And, you know, he's not blowing guys away at this catchweight either. And if you look at the records of Lamont Peterson and Mauricio Herrera, because I basically threw out the Salka fight, those guys are 140s who aren't exactly Aaron Pryor or, you know, Tommy Hearns in terms of their punching output or power. I think 47 may be very, very problematic for Mr. Garcia. CT, thank you for the call. As always, if you want to call
thank
in, 347-215-7598.
I just wonder what Garcia is going to look like at a full 47, you know? That Matisse fight, he looked great. He looked very strong. He looked like a big 140. Since then, it seems like weird diminishing returns, and I just don't understand why they didn't head to welterweight after that. And I tend to think that they weren't an Al Haymon fighter, meaning they were a fighter that could kind of call their own shots with their promoter a little bit, that maybe they would have made that move. But instead, because Al's got all these other 47s and all these other pieces, Danny stayed down at 40. And if you look at his body, even on Saturday night, he was ripped. But, you know, guys usually change a little bit from the weigh-in to the fight. They kind of fill out, get a little fleshier. Danny seemed very dry in the first quarter of the fight, looked a little tight, and the snap was not there. He just doesn't, to me, physically look very confident. He looks a little bit like Cotto did at his later stages at 140, where he's putting his offense on layaway, and he's not getting a lot done. I mean, maybe I'm a Danny Garcia apologist, but, I just tend to think that there's diminishing returns by not fully allowing his body to inflate when it wants to.
I said it after the Herrera fight. He had been at 139, which I believe is the amateur limit for junior welterweight. And this is back in March. I believe they fought March 15th of last year. I said it then. Now this is a full year beyond that.
Yeah.
He had been at right around the junior welterweight limit, I believe, since age 15. He probably should have moved up before the Herrera fight in a perfect world, which we don't live in,
yeah.
Gabe.
That's very true. I mean, you just know a guy needs to move up when he's making weight stipulations right after the fight in the ring. You know, we'll do it again at 147. You know, that just said it all to me. He's like, dude, he's killing himself. In the 718, you're live on the next round.
Hey, how y'all doing? Good evening. Good evening, Steve.
Good evening.
Good. What's going on?
A couple of questions. Is there going to be a Club Kim Saturday at Verona?
Yes, there will be. Now, I don't know what the alcohol situation is like in terms of buying it and stocking up my room, which I'll get into Saturday afternoon. I do have an assignment for CBS Sports Network on Friday night, and then I will be flying in to Syracuse. So if anyone out there listening that wants admittance into Club Kim, it's BYOB, And BYOV, bring your own vodka. And bring some mixers, too, while you're at it. You have that, you gain admission into Club Kim.
All right. I'll bring some. You want some Grey Goose?
Oh, is the Pope Catholic?
All right,
what type of question is that? Jeez.
To your other question, I think Garcia looked like Broner at 147. Where, like, he's okay, but he's not going to overpower anybody or mow somebody down.
Yeah.
He's going to look okay. Like, Broner at 135, a monster. He jumps up to 147. He's okay.
Guys, let me ask you this question. It was brought up by Ernie Gabione, and I hadn't thought about this. Do you think that the victory over Lucas Matisse, no matter how big it was, had an effect on him because he got banged up a little bit? It was a tough fight. It also gave him this impression that, hey, I'm the man at 140. I can call some shots. Do you think that that type of dynamic exists, that as big a victory as that was, it came at a cost for Danny Garcia?
I think that shows evidence that Matisse's fans are still damaged from the beating Danny put on in the boxing match. I saw that too. I didn't agree. I just didn't want to get into a Twitter beef with a friend. But that's just ridiculous. It wasn't like Danny ended the fight on the ropes. It wasn't like a Hopkins-Taylor situation. He clearly won the fight. Matisse wasn't as good as him. Everybody thought it would be a walkover. It wasn't. Get over it.
We have to wait till he acclimates to 147. Maybe his second fight, not the first fight, second fight win. No excuse. I'm used to the way I'm here. Then we can make pass judgment. But, yes, on Saturday night, he was complaining about Peterson moving around. He couldn't cut off the ring. And then when Peterson brought him the fight, he looked lost as well. He didn't know what to do. He's like, oh, shit.
He looked terrible.
That's
never
the thing that bothers me. He outboxed him and he outfought him. And now, for the record, and Gabe can vouch for me, I've always said if that fight got chest to chest, Peterson has a much better skill set from in close. I wish, and I understand, you want to be able to wear out Garcia a little bit, because in the first round of a fight, you can get caught cold. The guy has all his energy. Stamina is not a factor. But beware, when you're the B-side, giving up half the fight or being perceived as giving away half the fight, that's a very, very slim margin of error. And this is from a guy who believes that Peterson clearly should have got that decision.
And his trainer trained him well. He saw the punches coming. He rolled in most of the punches. I don't think he got hit cleanly the entire fight. Maybe I missed it, but he already knew what was coming, and he rolled in all the punches. I don't think he got hit cleanly maybe a few times, if any.
Gabe, why is Lamont Peterson?
What's that?
Go ahead, Gabe.
I'm just saying, when you're rolling like that, and it is about – it's a game of perception in terms of the judges. And to me, the perception was, even with those big rolls, they weren't small moves. They were giant moves, as if guy was just trying to get the hell out of the way of power shots. He gave the perception that Danny was the stronger guy because Danny was coming forward and throwing power shots. Even if he was missing or just hitting gloves, that was the perception. And Lamont gave it to us, and that gave Danny the fight.
Gabe, why do you think that Lamont Peterson is so disrespected? I mean, people call him boring, and I said, you got to be kidding me. I think he's been in a lot of good scraps, win, lose, or draw. He's got a very good skill set, and outside the first half of the fight against Garcia, he's usually a guy that sticks his nose in there and gets to work. Is this still fallback from the Amir Khan situation? Does it all go back to that?
It might. Yeah. I mean, he admitted he had testosterone in the system when he won that title from Khan, and I think – and they never really owned it, you know. I still get the sense that they feel that they were done wrong with the drug testing results rather than pointing to this, you know, Occam's razor says the simplest answer is the best answer, right? And the guy had a pellet in his ass when he won the title, and it was a slow-release pellet, and he got cut months later with the testosterone in his system. Just seems like that's what happened. They don't want to own that, and maybe it is that. But I think even before that, it's a lack of power, I think, that – you know, fans want to talk about they love good boxing, but if you can't really knock dudes out, there's always going to be a thing against you, against your punches. They don't count as much.
Mm, all right. So listen, I will see you on Saturday. See you at Club Kim.
Question. Can Quinn get that 160? Do you think he can make that weight now since he struggled? Or he's going to move up?
Who's this?
Quillen.
Quillen.
Huh. Quillen at 168, I think, let me tell you something, his punch resistance, that'll be an issue. I'll say it right now, 168, he might be Danny Garcia. He might start fighting at 164.5. Might find a nice Heyman shelter.
And Sugar Ray and the broadcast was shameful, praising him for not making weight and, like, moving past forward. Like, he didn't attempt to. Like, why are you praising him for not making weight? Oh, he's not thinking about the negative thing. He's being,
you know what it's like? It's like if you were late for work, guys, and I said, you know what, you're late for work, but I tell you what, man, the way you work the rest of the 3 hours and then punch that right on time, I'm giving you guys a raise, both of you. The hell is that? Come on.
Yeah. No, I think he stays at 160. I think the year off did him wrong, and they just missed. They just, his body had nothing left to give, but more activity, I think he'll stay at 160 and fight.
And
Danny
by the
Jacobs.
Way, that layoff, Gabe, that's on him too. So he created that circumstance. He was not a victim of it.
One last quick question. What do you think Kathy Duber thinks about PBC ruining all these markets with the tickets, flashing prices,
I don't think
away tickets, or anybody else? They're like, I was waiting for the tickets to go on discount for the Barclays. I'm like, I'm not paying full price yet. I know they're going to go on discount, and then they went on discount.
Right. And sometimes they're just giving away for free. No real promoter is happy with that current situation or the fact, and for all this screaming and wanting to crown the guy for bringing boxing back to free TV, he's doing time buys. Just think about the effects if this doesn't work. All right, we got to get moving. We might have another hour again. We're going to be all the way here till at least 8:30 Eastern time, possibly all the way up to 9. It depends on your participation. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, I just got tweeted another giveaway from another entity for Chavez Fanfara. Now, this is interesting. Now, I still live in the Los Angeles area. You're up north now. Gabe, I literally don't know more than 3 or 4 people from my zip code or area codes that's actually going to the StubHub Center this weekend.
That's crazy. Yeah, I mean, it's Chavez Fanfara. It actually could be a good action fight, but I think, you know, you train your audience, and Martinez, or, you know, Chavez has trained his audience not to trust him, not coming in weight-wise. I mean, Ernie hit it right on the head when he was talking about, you know, laughing to the media on Twitter, you know, a Chavez Jr. Media day on Friday at 5 in the Valley. Like, good luck to you guys, you know. That's the feeling of him, that he's going to not show up on time. He's going to screw the consumer. He's not going to show up on weight. And even if he doesn't win, he'll get the decision. We're tired of it. Who likes that guy? Who likes Silver Spoon guy that doesn't work that hard? The guy that – one of the phrases you said that I just love, the guy was born on third because he hit a triple. I think, the sales – boxing fans should learn a lesson about themselves from this, what they're doing to Chavez Jr. They could do this to pay-per-views. They could do this to the ratings. If you don't like something, don't buy it. Don't participate. Don't be a
The other factor, Lucas Matisse, Ruslan Provodnikov, those fights were made for the venue, like the StubHub Center, and it was basically engineered out of there. I think there's a backlash. I think the fans are very upset, and the fans,
yes,
if they had a choice, they would rather watch home on HBO and watch all the fights from the comforts of their home and watch Provodnikov, Matisse live. And, Gabe, I actually know a few people in our area or down south. They're actually going to Verona and not the StubHub Center, and they're Mexican. Let that sink in.
Wow. That's hardcore, man. They should be applauded. All right. That actually should gain you automatic admission into Club Kim.
Yes, indeed, yes.
free, waive the fee. You're live on the next round. 8:05.
Oh, we got our first knockdown.
I like it. In the 312, you've been on hold for an hour. You're live on the next round.
Okay, is that me?
312.
Yes, it is. What's going on?
Okay, yeah, this is John of Chicago. First, I just want to make a couple comments on the Quinlan fight, but I wanted to talk about the new math where he turns down $1.4 million and drops the belt and takes $400,000 to come back as a challenger.
So you think that wasn't a good decision, huh?
No, I don't think it was a good, but I guess that's the new math in the PBC.
Well, didn't you find it ironic, guys, that he turns down $1.4 million and he's 1.4 pounds overweight? The boxing gods had to be laughing at the irony.
Mm-hmm. Steve, yeah. I didn't find
and
it
about
ironic.
The Garcia,
beautiful.
Yeah, and about the Garcia fight, I think Peterson won that fight clearly. You know, I can't give a guy credit. Even though he's moving forward, he beat the hell out of the wind. But it's, his face took a lot of beating, too. And I got to give Peterson credit for that.
You know, I am not a fan of that type of boxing where it's just retreat, 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 like you're France during World War II. But the other guy, I don't think, did anything. And do I think the first half of the fight was even? I do. I did not think it was 5-1, 6-0 Garcia.
Right.
And I thought in the second half of the fight, I thought Peterson absolutely beat the tar out of Garcia.
Oh, yeah, when he stood with him toe-to-toe, the body punches, when they were hitting each other's body, it was Garcia who was moving backwards when he got hit in the body. He was hurt. And I guess this, the foot with six toes kept him up because he was taking a whooping throughout that entire fight.
Oh, no.
He took a whooping. He took a whooping, and his face said it all. When, at the end of the fight, it doesn't matter what you say. Because I think I heard his dad on another program talking about his son never got hit. That it
what?
Was headbutts.
What?
He said his son never got hit. It was headbutts. And
no,
the
no,
only
no.
reason his...
No, son never got hit by Manny Pacquiao or Floyd Mayweather on that night. I think that had to be the rest
yeah.
of the statement, right? Because he certainly got hit a lot by Lamont Peterson.
Yeah, but he was talking about that. He said it was headbutts, and the only reason Danny's face got like that is because Danny's light-skinned. And it was,
okay.
You listen to him, he's actually saying this, and he's trying to rationalize his son getting whooped. And I understand, you know, he had to sit there and watch it. But Garcia took a whooping. It was a whooping, plain and simple. And I don't know how the PBC is going to get along, because you can see the fights, you know, their guys had all the banners up there, and then they were getting all the promotion. They were the ones talking about it. And none of these analysts, you know, it makes you wish for a Larry Merchant to be there, to somebody kind of, you know, ask about Nick's upcoming fights. Because Garcia, I don't see him whooping anybody at 147 if he gets up there who can punch.
Gentlemen, here is
Larry
a tweet
Merchant.
From Punches and Bunches. PBC, predetermined boxing championship.
Put that on a T-shirt. Put that on a T-shirt. I'll buy one.
Premier boxing comps. But, you know, these guys, it's prepackaged. It's kind of antiseptic. The Lamont Peterson fight, you know, I'm going to go back and watch it again. Just listening to you guys talk, listening to Dave, I need to see it again. Maybe I'm just looking at the wrong thing. Certainly I felt Lamont won the – if he didn't get in rounds, he certainly won the fight. You could see it, like you said, in those last few rounds, Danny was backing up. Danny was retreating. And it wasn't like he was backing up and getting it good off the ropes. He was getting
but
it when he was in the ropes.
When I watched Peterson moving around the ring, I didn't see him as running as much as it was. He was frustrating Garcia by being in one spot, and then when Garcia would come there, he would move. And I think somebody was saying one time, well, you know, Peterson was taking six steps back. And I was thinking, well, the guy who's supposed to cut off the ring should take seven steps forward, then he cut him off. And he wasn't able to do any of that. It was like Garcia.
No,
if you
he
look
kept
at,
letting
him
escape.
Yeah, Peterson, he never looked like he was afraid or out of control. He looked like what they said, ring generalship. He was in control of the fight. He engaged when he wanted to engage. He made Danny Garcia look bad, swing at wind. And, you know, even to the point where he got mad at one point and wanted him to stand, you know, like I was almost thinking, like it's almost like a kid saying, Mommy, he won't stand still so I can hit him. You know, I mean, right. I'm supposed to stand still so he can hit me.
Yeah, to me, it felt like he took him mentally, Peterson took Garcia to Mauricio Pereira land. That was the plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was like going body punches to his psyche. And then sort of, you know, gave him a little bit like Floyd does. Okay, I'll step to you in the pocket, I'll make you miss, and then come forward, you know. To your point, though, about the commentators, how frustrating is it? I mean, you're an educated boxing fan. You know what you're looking at. You're watching it, and these guys aren't calling it. I mean, Larry Merchant keeps it more real on the Takata ad with Sly Stallone, bringing up Margarito and why Floyd didn't fight him, than Sugar Ray Leonard has done through two cards. How do you feel about
that? Yeah, I'm just looking at these guys and I'm saying to myself, okay, they're there, they're playing the roles, they're reading the scripts, they're not going off script, they're not going to ask about upcoming fighters or other champions, They know what they're there for, and that's unfortunate that they've actually accepted that role. In other words, anybody can be bought. It's just a matter of finding their price.
And remember this, guys. They are hired, in essence, by Al Heyman. Okay?
Yes.
And these are well-paying gigs, and everybody has bills to pay. Listen, thank you for the call. We'll talk to you soon, okay? Appreciate it.
Okay.
Here's a tweet from LRS, and I'm wondering if this guy's being facetious. Do you agree that the Chavez Jr. overall card is better than the HBO 2 cards? He's being facetious, right, Gabe? Because this guy cannot be serious.
That's ridiculous. No, yeah, he's got to be kidding. Maybe it's an honest question, but, I mean, I just don't see how you could possibly think that.
Yeah, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598, Gabe.
Let's see. In the 585, you're live on the next round. 585.
Hey, guys, it's Jake from Stakehawk.
Jake, what's going on with the khakis?
Hey, what's up? Actually, it's crazy. It was 80 degrees here, and there's so much snow in upstate New York, and not all of it's melted yet.
Oh, boy. It better melt by Saturday morning. That's all I know.
Well, what gets you into Club Kim again? Because, I mean, I'm stacked here.
Bring your whole bar. Bring a 12-pack. Bring a cooler. Bring an ice chest. We can get the ice from down the hall. Bring a fresh set of pleated khakis. Jake, you're in there. You're in there. I'm telling you.
Well, I'd like to – I don't know if you guys have any information on how many divisions the PBC is going to hand out belts in. Is it going to be like the UFC where they only have, like, five divisions or whatever? Because I don't think Heyman has anybody signed below 126 pounds.
No, he does. He has the Kameda brothers. My understanding is in most divisions he has at least one belt holder. And I don't believe he's going back to the traditional eight. I don't. Because too many fighters – I don't think would fit into that system. And even in the PBC system, you want more champions because you want to be able to say more PBC championship fights on every single card.
So he's going to throw on, I don't know, he's just going to give a belt. I mean, he's not going to have really anybody at 140 pretty soon. And Danny Garcia is moving up. So he's just going to hand the belt to, I don't know, Lamont Peterson maybe?
Right. Well, here's the thing, Jake, Gabe, what's stopping him? There's your answer. Nobody.
Thanks, because I know that I'm going to, like, I don't know, go get my hair cut or something, and my barber is going to be like, you see, Deontay Wilder is the heavyweight champ of the world, and I'm going to want to slap him in the face.
Jake, I'm going to tell you right now, when a guy has scissors and shears to your head, don't slap anybody in that position. I speak from experience. Trust me.
What do you guys see moving forward for Andy Lee? I mean, yeah, I know Saunders is mandatory. I mean, do you see that happening, or maybe the Triple G fight?
What I want to know, if one thing is about his promoter, at least from the state side perspective, is Lou DiBella. Now, Lou DiBella is all in with the Heyman crew. Gabe, I think it's very simple. Does Lou DiBella work on behalf of his fighter or Al Heyman? We're going to see.
That's a good question. Adam Booth, I believe it was, the trainer for Andy Lee now, tweeted, Lee versus Saunders and put, I think, a picture of, like, Wembley up. I think the feeling is that he's going to go overseas and do one for him. I think this is a good shot that he took, and they took it well, and they should move forward And it's a good defense. Ended in a draw. Wasn't really a defense, but I'm curious. Do you guys think that they fought? Do you think that when Quinlan didn't make weight, that took a little bit of an edge off the fight for both guys?
You know, that's an interesting question, Gabe. Because on a night when the second main event was a 143-pound fight between two belt holders at 140. I'm not sure it did or not, to be honest with you.
Well, but here's the thing. If Lee loses, he loses his belt. All of a sudden now, no matter what happens, he's got the belt, and he can go defend it. He's not going to get stripped. He's still going to make that kind of money and maybe be able to make a career out of it. So when you get down the stretch and, he's put down Quinlan, but Quinlan looks strong, he's still feeling him, you're just doing enough to box and get the hell out of there. hopefully get the decision. There's a little bit of that desperate edge that maybe he would have had, you know. Who knows? I just kind of wondered about it.
Yeah. Jay, who do you like Saturday night in my Verona? Provotnikov or Matisse?
You know, I just want to have to go with Matisse because he can do a little more in that. He can box, and I think that'll be the difference.
Okay, Jake, I will see you Saturday night. Club Kim, be there.
Okay. All right.
Gabe, a couple of news and notes here. Even in Kitrov, last two fights has been extended. And this is what I've always said about young prospects. As much as we fall in love with them, Gabe, we got to see them a little bit. In the last two fights, as he's gotten out of the third, fourth, fifth rounds, these guys look suddenly very human. I like Kitrov, hard-punching guy, got a lot of talent. But all this talk of him being the next Golovkin within 15 fights, let's pump the brakes on that.
Yeah, just relax. You know, I mean, I think his opponent did. He had a little more depth, a little more durability to him than they expected. A little more craft. Kind of a one-armed bandit. But you know, I think Kitrov, he just again, no jab, needs to step out to the and control either side. Really cut off that ring. He kept letting dude just escape out to the side. And he's more of a long-distance punisher. He's a guy that's going to needs to get close, beat on your guard, get to your body, kind of rough you up and soften you up to hopefully finish you off down the stretch. Does his stock, like, plummet? Absolutely not, but it's definitely one to be cautious of. I mean, somebody that has some power and has more than just a hard jab, that guy's going to be a problem for him, you know. We'll see. I think it's definitely good to get extended. At this stage, and find out where your weak spots are. Right? You know, better here than later.
In his defense, Aaron Coley is the first southpaw he has faced as a professional. It's always good to get that experience in your back pocket. And Gabe, Bob Arum confirmed to me while I was in Viva Puerto Rico that he has made a settlement. He's walking away from the life of Julio Cesar Chavez. So in other words, he got a few million dollars for his troubles, and they both walk away. And Gabe, what is there more evidence of, a golden ticket from Willy Wonka or a ticket for Mayweather-Pacquiao? Because right now, literally nobody can show you an actual ticket. And, Gabe, we're 3 weeks away. I mean, this is bizarre. Now, it doesn't affect the fans because, you know, quite frankly, because even though it's for the fans, we know it really isn't. But I've never seen anything like this. Literally nobody from the hotels, the fighters, the promoters, the sponsors, the networks can show you a ticket.
Maybe Floyd's getting like a protective gear made out of it or something. It's the strangest thing. I hate to be that guy, but doesn't it feel a little bit like maybe it won't happen?
No, it's going to happen, Gabe. It's going to happen. They're way too far along, but. You know, I just find it funny that they're admitting, well, we don't really have our complete deal with the MGM. Meanwhile, the MGM's putting up a big mural of the fight May 2nd, and they just recently announced the closed circuit price, which is $150, which I give them credit. I thought they'd gouge you all the way to $200. But I don't want to come off as disrespectful, but do you really think Mayweather Promotions was equipped to handle, quote-unquote, the biggest fight in the history of boxing by themselves as the lead promoter?
It showed arrogance, which, you know, shocking. Maybe the promotions of TMT, they showed arrogance. But these are the guys that brought you, what, Filthy Rich Records, which produced exactly no records?
Just like tickets.
TMT Promotions. Yeah. Yeah, the TMT was largely just a hat for a long time until what, like last year when they finally got a promoter's license, or late last year, early this year. You've been in a lot of pay-per-views. You've been the quote-unquote lead promoter with Golden Boy, but everybody knew Golden Boy's infrastructure was running those fights. So, I don't think they were prepared. There's no evidence to show that they were prepared, and there's more evidence to show that they weren't. You know, case in point, what's up with the tickets? What's up with the HQ, with the pay-per-view price? We now hear in the closed circuits, it'd be like $150, at an MGM property. The whole thing just seems just wrong.
Yeah, Gabe, I'm looking for the internet meme of Yeti with a pair of tickets to May 2nd, because basically they both probably exist in an alternate universe together. And again, here's what I find interesting. Leo Santa Cruz, it was announced, will be, I guess, the Heyman side of the pay-per-view undercard. Again, I don't want to belabor this point. We're 3 weeks away, and they just announced Leo Santa Cruz against another Tom Bob Anderson, TBA. By this stage, here's what I think. Just call Butterbean and Mia St. John. At least they made you laugh or cringe. But another Leo Santa Cruz whitewash? No thanks.
It's just embarrassing, you know? And again, it's I think the days – I was talking to somebody today that has an Al Heyman fighter, and I told them. They were kind of telling me, oh, it's going to be different with us. It's going to be, you know – we just talked a little bit about career goals and things, and we were talking about just Heyman fighters in general. And I said, dude, when you sign up with Al, the days of thinking of your career the way you did when you were a little kid or when you were growing up before you signed with Al, where you'd be in control and – hopefully, maybe you'd be able to grow into a Manny Pacquiao or a Floyd Mayweather, control your destiny, be your own franchise. You know, those days are over when you sign with Al. You may get paid better than everybody else, and it may be a more secure route making those kind of paydays than it is being in the I hope to be Manny Pacquiao sweepstakes. But control, you know, over your own legacy. I think that's what it's all about for a fighter in some regards. And you just give that up when you're with him. And Leo Santa Cruz's career is a hell of an example of that. This guy was a fan favorite. Now he's a meme.
347-215-7598. We can go up to another 34 minutes here on the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network. And this show is sponsored in part by Iron Gym at 14548 Ventura Boulevard, Sherman Oaks, California. That number, 818-322-4627, that's the Iron Gym. Gabe, let's run through these calls.
All right. 707, you're live on the next round. 707.
Yo, what's up? It's Carl.
Carl, what's going on?
What's up, Carl?
What's going on, fellas?
Hey,
what,
how you been,
what's up? I've been good, man. What's up with the that Klitschko fight, man? I mean, all this PBC and May 2nd, man, that totally fell on the radar. Is that still going on?
It's still going on, April 25th, and they'll probably draw a sizable crowd. I understand ticket sales have stagnated after a quick early start. I think the bottom line is not many people are giving Bryant Jennings much of a shot to beat Mr. Dr. Steelhammer.
Okay, is he another boxing banker like Calvin Brock?
Well, I don't know if he's a boxing banker, but he may go broke on the night of April 25th.
Wow.
Well, again, yeah. I mean, you're out of sight, out of mind, right? The guy doesn't fight, trying to hold on to his spot. It doesn't prepare you to take the championship in terms of fan momentum, which doesn't help you in the ring. But, I mean, you're just staying a well-oiled machine, and it's not like he's a guy with a ton of fights. He's still kind of a project, Ryan Jennings. I think the inactivity just does him wrong. He's not able to quite pull the trigger the way he wants to, and he gets taken out about eight or nine rounds.
Man,
agreed.
I don't even think it's going to go that far, man. It's just going to be stick, right hand, and that's it.
Hey, Carl, anything else we could do for you?
Nah, man. Peterson won that fight, though, man.
Carl, tell what Gabe know. Gabe, are you listening to the public? They are speaking to you. Come on.
Man, hey, Peterson was the bully in that fight. Just like Herrera was the bully, you know what I mean? Peterson was a bully, too, man. You know what I mean? I think if Herrera had a little more pop, if he had, like, Peterson's power, he probably would have got Garcia up out of there, man. Garcia moves up to 47, man. He's toast, man.
Yep. You know what I mean? Carl,
and I like Ruslan, you know what I mean?
Carl, you are on the record. Give us a call next week. We have exactly 31 minutes. Let's see how far we could take this, Gabe.
All right. I'm looking for the ones that have been on for a long time. In the 865, you're live on the next round. 865. Five.
We got a knockdown.
865. Yeah, boom. You hesitate, you get knocked down. 347. You're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Mike from Queens.
Hey, from Queens, what's going on?
I just got a question. With Chavez Jr. settling his contract with Top Rank, I mean, he's a – I mean, of course, he hasn't been selling tickets for this fight, but he's been a bigger star than I would say a Mikey Garcia is. Then what's stopping Mikey Garcia from settling his dispute with Top Rank?
You know, I have no idea. There's a rumor that he has already signed with you-know-who, and he's just waiting for his contract to run out. But I got to be honest with you. I don't see a big clamor for the return of Mikey Garcia.
Yeah, I was a fan, but, I mean, it's like I was a fan of you as a fighter, and you don't fight no more. Like, well, how could I be? You know what I mean? It's like I loved Derek Jeter my whole life, but when he stopped playing baseball, I'm not a Derek Jeter businessman fan. You know what I mean? I'm a fan of the top, you know what I mean?
You know, listen, I love the Lakers. I'm a big Kobe Bryant fan, but I'd much rather have him retire and let us move on than rather for cheering him saying, God, way to go, Kobe. We're going to win 25 games again next year, but hey, you're making $25 million. Attaboy, Bean. Good job.
Yeah, exactly. It's just weird. Like, so do you see him fighting in 2015 at all?
You know, who knows? Someone ought to ask him.
Okay, all right. And I love Matisse. I'm a big fan of his, but I don't see him winning this fight at all. Doesn't Provodnikov just look like a bigger, stronger Matisse?
You know, Matisse has pretty much been stuck in that 140 bubble, if you want to call it being stuck. But Provodnikov does have a track record, a pretty good one at 147. So if size and strength became an issue, I do think that favors Ruslan, Gabe.
Yeah, I do too. He's just a strong dude. You can see it in the Castillo fight. I mean, he just seems kind of bigger in that fight, just bigger and stronger. He's really kind of filling out. You know, it's gonna depend if Matisse can make him pay at long range. Like, you know, pick his spots, have Ruslan come in on a straight line. If it's a Ruslan that's moving his head, is a little more active offensively, and is not just looking for the one shot, I think he's got a great chance to win. And I think he's got an even better chance to stop Matisse.
Okay, by the way, are you going to the fight up in Queens?
No, I can't. I can't get all the way there. It's a six-hour drive, man.
Oh, I heard it's 2 hours from nowhere, is the way it was described to me. Listen, thank you for the call. And, Gabe, go back to the 865, one of our favorites, the Black Socrates. He's waiting.
Oh, yeah.
Black Socrates.
Wow, you're even echoing. Jeez. What's going on?
Yo, one point on Leo Santa Cruz, man. I mean, he's, you know, I feel like even though he's not fighting anybody but tomato cans, it doesn't matter because as long as he's in the spotlight, he's still going to get the views. So, I mean, that's what his claim to relevance today is, that he still gets these cards. So, you know, it's like as long as they keep him on these cards, the casuals will at least see him and know who he is.
Yeah, but Black Socrates, I'll say this, and I'm fully on the side of Gabe Montoya now because I used to be one of his biggest advocates, but his last fights have been boring and monotonous. There's nothing there anymore. It's just repetitive over and over and over again.
Well, you know something I think I'm noticing in the outer Al Haymon limits is that his collection of fighters, these top prospects that he took and left with, it just seems like across the board the performance is dropping. And now, you know, he's protected these fighters for so long. Could this possibly be an outcome of just being overly protective of them?
Yeah.
It seems like I don't know if it's the fire that's not there. I don't know. You know, I think that they realize they're over here. They're realizing that they're not. It's not the same. It's not even the same sport. You know, I myself was very, I guess, optimistic. I felt like a change needed to happen in boxing. I just don't feel like at this point right now that this is the change that needed to happen. Actually, I don't see how this can continue for 5 years.
Yeah, Gabe, haven't we said before in the past that Haymon fighters seem to have, some of them, not all, but a lot of them, have a sense of entitlement from being pampered by Mr. Haymon?
Yeah, I've always said that, you know, show me a Heyman fighter that's been properly developed into not just a title holder, but a champion with a solid resume, and I'll show you the first one.
And that's, I mean, that's his problem. I mean, smart as he is, this is Caesar we're talking about. I mean, whether you want to disagree with it or not, he's Caesar. And as smart as he is, I just don't feel like he has that great of a long-term game plan going. I mean, maybe he's got something else up his sleeve I haven't seen yet. But
Socrates, you know what's interesting about that whole situation? It's one thing when you were the A side, like Andre Berto, and you got easy fights on HBO. Now there's a pressure and an expectation to make real fights. When Heyman fighters have to fight other Heyman fighters, what about when they have no choice? And they're basically telling them, you have to take this fight on this date on that network, or you get back of that long line over there. That's going to be a culture shock for a lot of guys.
I think it is, and it's you know, when you've been pampered, and when you've been you had the easy road in front of you, you've been eating light dinners, you know, and all of a sudden the game changes, you know. That's what I see going on. Another thing I wanted to speak to you fellas about, man, is I want to go on record right now and say that I really think this main fight that we've waited so many years for is just not going to do what it's supposed to do. And regardless of what it does at this point right now, it's not going to do what it could have did.
Now, do you mean from a commercial standpoint or from an artistic standpoint inside the ring, or you mean both?
I mean commercially. Commercially, well, you know what? Now that you mention it, both. But I think right now the focus is on commercially. There's the expectation that it's a given. It's already given. It's going to do this, and that's why we've been, I think, handed the short stick so much about this fight, because it's a given. It's going to sell. This is the great. This is what we've been waiting for.
Well,
I think
Black Socrates, Gabe, let me read you this tweet we just got from Loic Ransom. Not sure if you guys are done with the next round, but love to hear your thoughts on the non-existent Maypac promotion. Here's my opinion, Gabe. They thought the thought was, we've been building this fight for 5 years. We've promoted it for so long. We don't need to do anything. Literally, Gabe, they haven't done anything. I mean, we're 3 weeks from the fight. I watch a lot of TV. I have not seen any commercials for these fights like you usually do from your cable system. And I think that's part of the reason. One of the reasons is they don't even have a deal with them.
Is it really a case
the fight sells itself, or a case of boxing fans will buy anything? Is that what they mean when they say that?
It's interesting.
I think what it is, I almost feel like we're being punished. I mean, I'm serious. I think we're being punished because we demanded this, and we wouldn't take nothing else but this. Okay, so here you go. It's like you asked for a certain meal that your wife doesn't want to cook, and she cooked it for you, but she didn't do it good. Well, you asked for it. That's what you want.
Yeah. Well, that should be the tagline for this fight, then. Hey, you asked for it. Just like that.
Hey, let me give you one more. Let me give you one more.
Yes.
Okay.
Promo is going to kill him, man.
Whoa. Black Socrates putting it out on the line with the kill card. Socrates.
Honestly.
Wow.
I've heard claims that Matisse's better boxing skills is going to lead him to victory. But I'm telling you, these boys is here to throw bombs, man. This is Major League Baseball right now. They're knocking them out of the park.
The soundtrack should be Public Enemy because they've got the bomb squad. There's no doubt about it. Get Hank Shockley on the phone immediately. Black Socrates, we got to run, okay?
Right on.
Here's a tweet from A. Flores. Gabe, Oscar Valdez fought this weekend. What'd you think? Is he ready for the big boy soon? Gabe, I think if he learns a little bit of patience and not rushes so things, I've said for a while, I think this is truly a blue-chip prospect.
He really is. He's developing nicely with Manny Robles. He's a thinking man's fighter. He likes his guys to thinking man's trainer. He likes his guys to box with aggression, but do it intelligently. The thing that is missing from Oscar, though, I'm not crazy about his front side defense. I don't like the low lead hand. You know, the upper body movement is nice, but I think against somebody with some more speed, it's just not going to work. I think it's going to be a bad shoulder roll. It has that potential danger. And because of that low lead hand, his jab, it just doesn't telephone out, and it's not active enough. He's not, you know, softening up his opponent with that jab or setting up other combinations with it. Everything else, though, I really like. I think the footwork is coming along. I think I love the way he came into this fight, already having broken his sweat. It tells me that he made weight well and that they warmed him up correctly. And the finish, you know, they had that headbutt clash, and Ramirez is kind of pawing at his eye. So Valdez goes at the eye, starts to make the attack about the eye, and then bang, goes downstairs and ends things right away. It was a beautiful assassin-like finish. I really like this kid.
I think with Valdez, offense will be defense and vice versa. Here's a tweet from Mayweather. Pacquiao, with this PBC commentating and A-side system, they are creating a new breed of dumbass boxing fans. Make money and not legacy shit. Okay, nothing there I disagree with. Here's the president, the way he describes the PBC in one word. Walmart. And with that, Gabe, let's go back to the phone.
That's great. 931, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up, guys? Keep calm, seeing Rocky Top people.
Hey, what's going on, Eduardo?
Hey, how was Viva Puerto Rico? How was it, Steve?
I'm going to say is this. I cannot wait till Felix Viva Verdejo becomes, like, the next guy. And because let me tell you something, he's going to draw 15,000-20,000 there automatically. And the natives are great. The scenery is great. The weather is great. Madaya, the only complaint is they only come in 10-ounce cans, not 12. But that's okay. We can overcome that. Wepa.
Hey,
what a great trip.
Hey, you know, I'm officially on the bandwagon, man. I'm going all in for Felix Verdejo. So don't let me down, Korean Jesus. I'm taking a little faith.
Hey, it's more up to him and Ricky Marquez than me. I just want to say that for the record.
Hey, so let me get this straight. So did Gabe think Danny Garcia won?
Yes, he did. How dare he, huh, Eduardo?
I agree with him, actually. I had Danny up 3 points or 3 rounds.
Gabe,
yeah.
Let's go to the next call.
Oh, damn. For real?
So, Eduardo, the bottom line is you think the first half of the fight, Lamont Peterson threw it in the garbage can.
Yeah, did you know what it reminded me of a lot? It reminded me of Trinidad De La Hoya, but kind of inversed, I guess. And, because all the running and, it looks nice, but he wasn't, he was moving, but he really wasn't throwing. The aggressor was Danny, so you got to give it to the active aggressor. I mean, you can't win a round by dancing. You got to throw punches. I guess I'll leave it there. I just want to celebrate, and I'm happy to be wrong that Roque Martinez beat Salido. I actually thought Salido was on TKO Martinez. But you know what? Viva Puerto Rico, bro. That's cool.
All right. Eduardo, thank you very much. We still have up to 18 minutes if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. This is the next round with Gabriel Montoya and Steve Kim.
In the 951, you're live on the next round. 951. 951?
Ooh, another knockdown. We're going Salido here.
All right. Let's see. 787, you're live on the next round. 787? Brutal.
Ooh, we're really going Salido here.
Yeah, this is like Lee and Quillen all of a sudden. 510, you're live on the next round. 510.
This is now becoming Dempsey Firpo.
This is out of control. Let me see. Let's go to a blocked number. Blocked, you're on live on the next round.
Hello? Okay, next in line.
Okay, moving to the other blocked number. You're live on the next round. Nope. Anything?
Oh, I heard hello. Hello? Are you there? Bueller?
Anything. All right, one more. I've got a couple more. 502, you're live on the next round. 402, rather. 402.
Hi, this is Azeem calling from Omaha.
Omaha, the home of Terrence Crawford. Now, the question is, will you be in Arlington, Texas to watch your hometown fighter?
No, but I was kind of thinking about going to Chicago next week to watch the Durrell fight.
Wow, you must be a sadist to go to that. Ugh, okay.
Yeah, no, I really wanted to go watch the Lucas Matisse and Prudovnikov fight, but I couldn't get tickets for Verona.
I just want to let you know that Artie Palullo said the tickets are sold out, but they are adding bleacher seats, a couple of hundred extra tickets. So you may be again, a little late to get flights, and I've heard Syracuse costs you an arm and a leg, so that might be a logistical issue.
Yeah, but I'd rather spend money on a good fight than watch any of PBC cards. And talking about PBC, I have a theory. Gabe and you always talk about what Al Heyman's plan is. I think his plan is to have a tournament of boxing, Wimbledon or the Masters in golf, where it's just one week of the year where he's gonna have all his best fighters fight. If they're available, well and good. If not, he's still going to have the fights with the second tier, but he's going to call that tournament the Super Bowl of boxing or something like that and maybe sell ads that way.
You know, I don't mind that theory. Here's the problem, though, guys. We already know that a large majority of the best fighters, guys like Golovkin, Terrence Crawford, Sergey Kovalev, Klitschko, they don't exist in that universe. And if you want to push that as the premier boxing championship, I feel like calling the Better Business Bureau and saying, wait a minute, we got false advertising going on over here.
Yes, I think that's true, yeah, because there's so many other fighters. And so do you know, what are his plans for, the European fighters, for the British fighters or, the Russian fighters? Is he going to, sign up any of those fighters?
He's already signed a group of Russians and placed them, I believe, with Lou DiBella. This is a world takeover, and I believe they'll be hitting foreign markets. I believe he bought the time on not Univision or Azteca, but the network in Mexico that escapes my mind right now that used to be with Saul Alvarez. So, yes, I believe this plan extends beyond North America.
All right. And lastly, I just had a prediction for the Prudovnikov-Matisse fight.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a blessing in disguise for Prudovnikov that Roach is not going with him, because I remember I went to the Mike Alvarado fight live, and then I came back and watched it on tape. His trainer, I think his co-trainer, I don't know his name.
Marvin Samudio.
Yeah, he was instructing him to throw combinations, and that's when I think Prudovnikov took over the fight and actually knocked out Mike Alvarado. And when Prudovnikov fought Algieri, he was just one punch. He was just throwing one punch at a time, and I think at that point, if Roach had told him to throw combinations, the result would have been a little different. But I think it's a blessing in disguise for him.
Okay, you have been heard. Thank you for the call, Gabe. We have about 13 minutes left. Let's keep going here.
All right, 203. You're live on the next round.
Hey, hello.
Yes.
Hello?
Who is this?
Hey, it's Destro from Queens, New York. Hey, did you guys think PBC, remember, 2008, the bailouts of the, AIG and Bear Stearns and Fannie Mae, is PBC too big to fail?
That's a very, very good question, because there have been people who have compared this venture to Bernie Madoff with boxing gloves. I think that question should probably be asked in about 12 to 18 months.
I see.
So, what are your thoughts on the PBC? What are your thoughts on the PBC thus far?
You know, I'm liking probably most of the shows. The Adonis Stevenson, I just skipped it. To me, it was, 98% sure that Adonis Stevenson was going to win. So I didn't bother watching it, at all. I had stuff to do. Showtime, I canceled Showtime, 4 months ago. It was a waste of my time. I don't know. I like it so far. I like it, especially over the weekend. I like, Annie Lee and the Lamont Peterson. I like it. Hopefully it succeeds, but they have to be less predictable in some of their fights.
The question is, can they keep up the quality control for 7 or 8 networks, and can they sustain the amount of matchups at the level of Andy Lee Quillen and Peterson Garcia? That's just a number one, the priority, I believe. And then they have to be able to sell ad space.
I hope so. Well, one last question, guys. What are your thoughts on Danny Garcia allegedly saying that, you know, admitting or telling Lamont Peterson that he lost the fight? To me, it sounded like he said I lost, but I don't know if I took it out of context or not.
You know, he might have said that. Who knows? I didn't exactly break that down like the Zapruder film. But when it's all said and done, Gabe, he's not a judge. He isn't. So
right.
It almost – I'm not saying it doesn't matter what he says, but it's not the end-all and be-all.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
All right, guys.
And I also kind of felt that the judges were being very fair that night. I mean, the Andy Lee fight could have easily been a landslide victory for Peter Quillen. And it seemed like the judges were calling it, you know, straight up fair. I don't know the reason for that, but, you know, but I have to think that if they're calling it right in that fight, maybe they're seeing something in Garcia Peterson that I'm not seeing, you know, or that I feel I'm seeing, and getting it right there, too. But, you know, it could be.
Yeah, Gabe, quick comment on what you just said. One of the judges, so I'm a judge for the New York Metro Boxing, the amateur, you know, USA Boxing. I commend the judge who scored. There was a round where Andy Lee got knocked down, and if the judge still scored at 10-9, although, like, you know, a lot of judges would say it's 10-8, the guy got knocked down, I don't care what else happened for the rest of the round, you know, it's a 10-9 round, a 10-8 round because Andy Lee got knocked down, that, you know,
right.
That's something we do in amateur boxing, and in amateur boxing, it's not uncommon to see a round, like a 10-7 round with no knockdowns, so I commend that judge who, you know, who scored at 10-9, although there was a knockdown.
Okay, thank you for the call. We have about 9 minutes here. Gabe, let's keep on moving.
All right. And the 315, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys, you got Dan in Syracuse?
What's up,
Dan,
man?
Now, as close as you are, you are going to Provodnikov Matisse, right? Isn't that like a 20-minute jaunt for you?
That's what it is. I will be going.
Yeah, in fact, I'm arriving to Syracuse in the afternoon, and I'm actually getting driven by one of Jim Boeheim's tutors. So I expect a very nice ride.
Really? I knew there was going to be a Jim Boeheim thrown in there somewhere.
I couldn't resist. I couldn't resist.
I got Friday off of work also, and I was wondering if you guys could give me – is there some way that I could go to the weigh-in?
Yeah, I would just go to the hotel and – stick around. I believe the weigh-in's going to be open to the public, and they should have some sort of notice about when and where that is in some sort of ballroom. I've actually never been to the Turning Stone.
Okay. And one more question I got is, do you guys know anything about, I believe his name is Patrick Teixeira?
Yes, he is on the undercard. I think he's an okay prospect. The one guy that I'd look for that I believe has a real good upside that's on this undercard is a kid by the name of Lamont Roach. Lamont Roach, I think, has a lot of ability. And now that you asked me, I punched it up here from our email. The official weigh-in for Provodnikov Matisse at 5 p.m. at the Convention Center. And it'll be at the Seneca Rooms at Turning Stone Resort Casino. It's at the Onondaga Tuscarora Cayuga Seneca Rooms. There's a lot of Indian stuff being but it's at the Convention Center.
Right. I know right where it's at. Great. That's all I needed. Thanks a lot, Gabe.
All right. I will see you there, Dan, this weekend. Gabe, let's keep going.
All right. I stayed there when I went to the Hall of Fame. Turning Stone's nice, man. Nice facilities, nice pool, nice hot tub. And if you like Italian food, Steve, I recommend the restaurant. 517.
Absolutely.
Live on the next round. 517.
Hey, what's going on? It's with Marcus again.
Marcus, what's going on? Just a couple minutes before your workout, right?
Yeah, I got to work out now. I just had me a little Debbie cake.
Oh, man, you better hit that cardio. You better hit that cardio, LaMarcus.
Well, yeah, now, I'd like to thank you for making me spend more money and getting me ready to go to Puerto Rico.
You know what? I truly am boxing's economic stimulus. It's what I do. It's what I do.
Got to add that to the bucket list now.
Well, Marcus,
I was just,
as we talked about last week, are you going to Vegas for May 2nd?
It's looking like no. It's looking like
well, then there you go. Viva Puerto Rico. That becomes Boricua money right there.
There you go. Thank you, Southwest.
Want to get away?
Yes. But yeah, no, I was just listening right now. But but as far as Peterson goes, I had him winning him, but he gave it away, man. He did a little too much of nothing at the beginning. Though I liked what he was doing, but I can see how he lost the fight, man. And I got to go with time around. So I like them both, but it's Matisse. I think he's
going
to...
LaMarcus, are you going to the fight this weekend?
Nope. I got school I got to take care of, so...
Ah, okay. Well, we all have priorities. We all have priorities.
Yeah, but yeah, go ahead with you guys tonight, man. I'm just like I said, I'm just listening.
All right, LaMarcus, cool. Thank you as always for the quick drop by. Gabe, we have 5 minutes. Who else is left there?
Let's give it a shot with the 813. You're live on the next round. 813.
Cool, am I live?
81.
Yes, you
are.
You are
live.
Okay, let me take you off speaker. I didn't know I was gonna be there. I didn't intend on that. Okay. Well, anyway, and I don't know if it's been addressed. I haven't been able to listen all show. My thought is, aside from this bloodbath that everybody's predicting, I think Matisse just goes out and stays away from the guy boxes. I think Algieri's shown the script on how to beat Provodnikov, and I don't see why Matisse, when he is a better boxer, hangs around and gets those shots to the eye from Provodnikov.
That, you know, it's interesting. Not many people have Matisse by outboxing Provodnikov, but Gabe, is that really in his psychological and physical skill set in the ring?
I think it is. It's actually going to be my original pick before I flip-flop. I think it's pre-flop flip-flop. But you know, I think that he does have that ability. And just listening to him talk about the fight, what he intends to do in the fight, I believe that's his plan. I don't think he wants to get into the fight of the year. I think he wants to tame this guy early on, pepper him with jabs and right hands, maybe get involved in some left hooks and uppercuts later on, but really just keep it a boxing match. I think that's his best chance to win.
Okay, well, you are on the record, Matisse, with a boxing performance over 12 rounds. Gabe, we could probably stick in one more call here.
Let's see what we got. 714, you're live on the next round.
Hey, it's Lenny the Fight Smith.
Lenny, you are closing it out here. What do you have?
All right, I'm not on the LAX flight path this week, but I just quick predictions for this weekend. I agree with the last guy. I think Matisse, he has to outbox Provo. There's no way he can go in there and try and duke it out. That's just, I mean, if I were Matisse's trainer, that's the only angle you can play. Provodnikov's chin's too. Is just too good. I don't think Matisse has enough power to knock him out. So I think he just grinds it out, stays away enough, and wins enough rounds to squeeze it out by decision.
And Lenny, you're from the Southern California area. Are you going to the Chavez Fonfara fight?
You know what? I just got another email from Golden Boy. But
let me guess. Hold on. Now they're offering you a limousine ride up there with a free tickets to Spearmint Rhino afterwards. Is that the latest offer?
And an Applebee's gift card.
Ooh! And so what's your answer?
No, I still can't do it. If it was Olive Garden, maybe.
Lenny, I'm telling you, I don't know a lot of people going to this event.
No, I mean... I don't either. I don't know. I haven't talked to any local boxing fans who are going. A bunch of us are going to watch Golovkin in Monroe.
Good choice.
In a few weeks,
good choice.
But yeah, Chavez Fonfara is not really doing it for me. I love the StubHub Center too. I mean, we talked about it before. It's just, I'd rather go see good fights.
Yeah, and I think that fight would have done much better in Chicago with the Polish contingent that is up in that city. Lenny, we are running out of time. We got to get going, okay?
All right, peace, guys.
All right, and that's it for this week's edition of The Next Round with Steve Kim and Gable Montoya. We want to remind you this show is sponsored in part by Iron Gym, located at 14548 Ventura Boulevard, Sherman Oaks, California. That number, 818-322-4627. That's the Iron Gym. So on behalf of Gable Montoya, this is Steve Kim saying till the next round, goodbye, everybody.